Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. We're here with The Conversation. This is another edition of The Conversation inspired by Survive 365. And as usual, we are joined by the author of that great work, this is Clark Garrison. And I'm Kim Morrison. Clark, how are you?
I am wonderful. It's time for another great show.
Yes, yes. What do we have in store today?
Well, you know, we got a very interesting show today. We're going to be talking to two cast members of a very internationally well-known play titled from the movie, inspired from the movie, I should say, in 2002, Drumline. So those of you out there who are fans of historical black college bands, which have inspired so many around the world, are going to be in for a treat today. So we look forward to having two guests come on, and we're going to have a dynamic talk and see if we have some fun with them today.
That'd be great. I love Drumline, didn't you?
I love the movie, you know, especially being a person who was in a historical black college band, marching under the Florida A&M University. You know, I was almost jealous that I wasn't young enough to be in the movie. So, absolutely.
You could have still marched, couldn't you? You could have
still marched. You know, I like to think I could, but that might be presumptuous of me. But I would have given it a shot, nevertheless.
Okay, okay. And we have someone else on as well. We have, we know there's a program that's happening in your city that is right along the lines of Survive 365, correct?
That is correct as well. We're going to hopefully get a chance to talk to a wonderful gentleman, Dr. John Downey, who is now in outskirts of Atlanta, Georgia, in Newnan, Georgia. He's going to come on and hopefully share some information about a health fair that he has going on in the Atlanta metro area. You know, right now with so many issues with insurances and people being laid off and just not having the resources or money to take care of themselves, this is a program and an event that I think everyone who is in driving distance should really take advantage of and visit. So we're going to be able to talk to Dr. Downing later on, or actually coming up as one of our guests on the show today.
Absolutely. And with healthcare, like you said, being what it is and being such a hot topic now, and not just being a political topic and a topic of news, but being forefront for people's lives. A lot of people, Clark, don't have health care and can't afford it. And I think this program is just so essential where folks can actually get tested. You know what? We'll let Dr. Downey tell a lot about that program, but I'm just really excited that we get to highlight it today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I recently just met Dr. Downey and his lovely wife, Ms. Bessie Downing, and let me just say that they're wonderful people. Dr. Downing has been in the industry almost his entire life and has an amazing track record, and we'll hopefully get a chance to speak with him on this program that's coming up.
Okay, now I believe he may be on. Did you want to go to Dr. Downing now?
Well, absolutely. Let's see if he's on. We may have him on.
Okay. All right, let's see if he's on. Hello, is Dr. Downing with us? Okay, hasn't joined yet, Clark.
Okay, not a problem. I'm sure he'll be on. But let's talk a little bit about our show today. Kim, you've had some history, and we always talk about this on past shows, that you know, your family's background is similar to mine. Actually, you know, your father was in the same school that I was and the actual same band I was in. So you have had a life of growing up around historical black college bands. What influence has it played on you growing up?
Well, and like you said, my dad was a member of the 100, and because of that, my parents were always Florida A&M University boosters growing up. So as a kid, well, I can tell you, as a young kid, you know, you never want to do what your parents are doing when you're little. You know,
never.
So As a young kid, you know, I got taken to, like, every FAMU game across the country. I mean, I know where all the classics are. I know all of that stuff because we went to all of them because they were
right.
so involved with support. And I can say that they were in a support mode for Florida A&M's band. But then as I got older, you know, when you get to be a teenager, then you really, you know, you start liking some stuff. So I got to be a teenager and realized, man, this is really amazing. And then especially when you get to high school, being in a band myself, you know, you sort of knew the intricacies of what a band does, how we march, and not just core, but black bands are different.
Right.
It's extremely different. It's a whole different dynamic because, you know, especially like in high school, and you can appreciate this too, having to play the instrument, remember the music, march, you know, in formation and dance, craziness.
Yeah.
And
you know, never
watch,
been done before.
Never. You know, and then to watch bands like Florida A&M University and, you know, some other schools, you know, and you see I didn't mention any other schools, my dad would be so upset. But, you know,
yeah,
watching
I'm sure he's
other
with
bands,
me.
I'm sure he is. And then, you know, watching other bands to do it with such precision and such grace, you know, it's amazing because you knew what went into it. So the influence it had on my life is, you know, a lot of discipline because it does. It takes discipline to do that. And my love of music really thrives from that because not only did Florida A&M play the popular songs, but you guys, all your band directors also really urged you guys to be musicians, to be classically trained, and you could tell that when you're listening to you guys. So a lot of influence, not just from my home, but, you know, especially when I got to Tallahassee as well. So Drumline Live is exciting to me. I can't wait till they come to my area.
You know, and regrettably, this is going to be their second kickoff tour in the United States. They've done some wonderful things in the Asian market and almost like rock stars over there. But I will be catching it as it comes to the East Coast, I believe in early part of 2011 is when they'll kick off their East Coast tour. And, you know, I've got to make this, if nothing else. I've heard it's a wonderful show. I've heard some great things. And from what I've seen online, it's well worth the time. And everyone should really go out to view it. And if you're looking for times and show dates, just visit their website. And I believe it's www.drumlinelive.com.
Now,
I want to say historically black colleges and universities have a long tradition. As many of you may know, they were started pretty much after the Civil War as institutions of higher learning for African Americans. And a part of that HBCU sprouted marching bands, which began, as most do, as support for college football teams. But since then, it's grown into a sport of its own. I know there are many classics that go on, and most HBCUs are traditionally in the Southeast, and we know of many events that in many parts are much larger than the actual game that happens there. Things like the Honda Battle of Bands, the Florida Classic, and the Bayou Classics can oftentimes bring in audiences of more than 60 to 100,000 easily. In those cities and largely become the main event. I know it just next weekend here in Atlanta, we're going to have a classic of, as it always is, Tennessee State comes into Atlanta along as well as Florida A&M University, and the city will be on lockdown. I mean, literally, there will be hardly anything else going on as the African-American community surrounds those events. So we'll look forward to that.
Well, and you know, and I must tell the audience, you're being quite modest because we're talking about something that's so dear to your heart, which is, you know, marching in a marching band. Does watching Drumline Live, like the promos and all of that stuff, does it bring it back to the forefront for you? Does it bring that memory? Does it flood it back for you?
It does. You know, I'm in my mid-40s now, and every time I see, you know, or hear on TV or on live a show, you know, I always get a feeling that I could do it one more time. just one more time. You know, I got to. Exactly. Exactly. One more for the Gipper. But, no, it will always be a part of who I am. As we talked a little bit about in our last show with Dr. Foster recently having been passed away, you know, it brought back old memories, and I'm so sad that I could not go to the funeral. But I hear it was pretty much everyone or bits and pieces of everyone who marched since 1946 to now showed up, and that's a testimony of what marching bands really play itself out for people. You know, I was talking to a good friend who marched with me, and he said, you know, it has made his career. It is the focus and discipline that you learn and the practices. You know, people watch that movie. If they saw that movie, they saw that these guys practice relentlessly. You know, it was always a big joke when I was in college that we practiced more than the football team did. You know, if nothing else, certainly, huh?
You did.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. If not more, in many cases, because that was, you know, behind education. That was the second greatest thing you were there for. And unfortunately, some people, that was the most thing you were there for.
And we know some of those folks, too.
And we know a few of those people.
Yes,
yeah, absolutely. And I think we have Dr. Downing online now.
We do. So, Dr. Downing, we're going to welcome him in just a moment.
And while we're doing that, I can just tell briefly a little bit about Dr. Downing.
Sure.
Dr. Downing is a native of Hampton, Virginia. Dr. Downing graduated from the historical, as we talk about HBCUs, Morehouse College in Atlanta, Georgia, with honors, received a doctorate of medicine degree from the Harry Medical College. He completed his residency in pediatrics at Freeman's Hospital of Howard University, the great Howard University. And so without further ado, do we have him on, Kim?
I believe so. Dr. Downing, are you with us? Dr. Downing?
He's actually the 0507.
Okay. We'll bring him in just a moment. Dr. Downing,
yes,
are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. How are you, Dr. Downing? This is Clark Harrison.
All right, good to be here.
Great, wonderful. Well, Dr. Downing, we've already kind of talked a little bit about your community health there and the importance that it's bringing to not only the community but surrounding areas. And I just wanted to allow you some time to come on and make our audience aware of not only the event of itself, but what you all are after by hosting this, by the way, I should say, free event for the Metro Atlanta area.
Yes, thank you. Well, this is something that is done annually. It's sponsored by the Community Church of God at 850 Cascade Avenue Southwest. But we are in the business of trying to improve the health of our community, both locally and throughout the Atlanta area. And in so doing, we are offering this community health fair this year, which will be held on Sunday, September the 26th at 1:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. And the services are provided free by professionals and would include things such as blood pressure screening, your weight, height, and your BMI. There will be dental screening, sickle cell screening. There will be professionals there to do posture screening. And we will be able to give you the American Diabetes Association risk screening test. There will be people from the Fulton County Health Department doing HIV and STD screening. There will be dental and oral screening. And we have people there who will help seniors who need Medicare gap insurance. They will be there. There will be demonstrations for nutritional healthy cooking and there'll be free sampling of some of those products that will be cooked on site. And we will have free literature on various kinds of health problems that affect especially the African-American community. Because as you know, there are certain health problems such as diabetes, high blood pressure, and stroke that are prevalent in our community. And along those lines, we are a part of the Search Your Heart program, which is funded by the American Heart Association. And the grant this year is held by the Morehouse School of Medicine. And we will be in a cooperative effort with them, beginning at the health fair itself. And the purpose of that program, of course, being a community-based educational clinical research program, is to help reduce the risk and prevent heart disease, hypertension, stroke, and diabetes, which are rampant in the African-American community.
Amazing.
Wow.
And Doc, this is, again, is going to be Sunday, September 26th. From 1:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the Vickers Building on 838 Cascade Avenue in Atlanta, Georgia, 30311.
Right.
Dr. Downey, can you tell us, is there a contact number if someone is interested in finding more information about the event that they can call?
Sure. There are two numbers. There's one that's located at the church office, which is 404-755-4100. That's one number, and if you wish to contact me directly, since I am the coordinator of the Community Health Fair, my number is 770-254-0507.
So, Dr. Downing, literally someone can come to this health fair and walk away knowing the state of their personal health for free.
Yes,
that's amazing.
It. Yes.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. Doc, again, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing this. And, Doctor, just so they know that, because I think a lot of times in these free events, people believe that they're not really talking to or being seen by professionals. Can you explain to everyone who they will actually be able to sit down and talk to?
Yes. Thank you. I'm glad you asked that question. I will be there as a physician. The posture screening will be done by a local chiropractor who has practice here in Atlanta. We will have people doing sickle cell screening who have been trained by the Georgia Sickle Cell Foundation. The people who will be taking your blood pressure will be persons associated with Philadelphia School of Osteopathic Medicine from the Atlanta campus. And also, the Search Your Heart program will be conducted by the people from the Department of Community Health and Preventive Medicine at Morehouse School of Medicine. The nutritional part is by a professional nutritionist who serves as a consultant to Atlanta Children's Healthcare. So we have a number of people there. These are all people who are active in their professions and who are operative in Atlanta.
Amazing.
And Clark, it is amazing. Clark, if you make sure before we close out this segment, please say the address of the church and the date again so people can be sure to, if not themselves, you know, get your family members, everyone. We all have family members who are afraid to go to doctors, who do not keep up with their health care. Please take your family to this event so that they can know the state of their own health care. Clark?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's 838 Cascade Avenue in Atlanta, Georgia, 30311. And that's the Vickers Building. This next Sunday, September 26th, from 1:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. Dr. Downing, I want to thank you so much for coming on and giving this information and giving some insight into what this event is about and what this event is trying to achieve for our community. So thank you so much for spending time with us today on the conversation, sir.
All right, thank you, and it's been a privilege, and we are doing it for the benefit and the health of our community.
Amen.
Outstanding, and I look to talk to you soon about some other events coming up, sir.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Well, Kim, that was definitely, and as I shared with you earlier, this is impactful. I mean, free?
Yeah. Free, and I mean, and these are professionals who are taking time out of their schedules to, you know, really care about our, you know, our community's health care. And think about it. It's us helping us. That's so amazing. That is so aligned with Survive 365.
Exactly, and that's why, and that's what we're about. I mean, Survive 365 is a movement that is about taking care of our communities first and foremost. You know, I remember going back to even when Obama was elected president and standing on the stage and everybody having such an emotional night and remembering that President Obama said that, you know what, now starts the beginning. And it's part of why this movement even took off. It's because it is up to us to now put in some work.
Absolutely. And Dr. Down is definitely doing that because I know he's a very busy physician, you know, successful in his own right, and what he's doing, he does not have to do. He really doesn't.
Not at all. Not at all. Dr. Downing is retired and could easily just ride off into sunset, but he's committed to his church and his community and to society. So being a Morehouse man, one cannot expect anything less.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Well, we're going to turn this corner back to another aspect of being at an HBCU, and that is HBCU bands, marching bands specifically. And
exactly.
I think you have some gentlemen here who have taken that whole movement on the road, which I'm very excited about. So if you want to go ahead and do some introductions, we can bring them in.
Well, these gentlemen are dear to me, and I've known them for quite some time. We've marched together. I've seen them grow up and become leaders in the Marching 100. In fact, all of us were drum majors at one point, and even one of the gentlemen, a head drum major, which is just the highest honor one of the highest honors one can have in the Marching 100. And so without further ado, I want to see if we have him on the line. Mr. Ryan Snell, are you there?
Hey, Clark. I'm on the line. How's it going?
Oh, man, it's outstanding. Thanks for coming on and having a chat with us to talk about your wonderful, wonderful play, Drumline Live, as it kicks off its second tour in the United States. And I know that we, at some point, we're going to be hopefully talking to another good friend of ours, Mr. Slater Sorum.
Yeah. Hopefully Slater will be chiming in today. I know he was doing some traveling today, and he was trying to get somewhere stationary so he can make the call. So hopefully he'll join us before the end of the call. Absolutely.
Well, that would be wonderful if we can have him on. Slater, you aren't on yet, are you? All right. Just wanted to check in. All right, well, Brian, we're going to jump right in because I want to get you to talk as much as possible, sir. So without further ado,
no problem.
Good. Well, Brian, who is Don Roberts, and how was Drumline created?
Don Roberts, I could go on and on and on about Don. Don currently he's the creator behind Drumline Live. Don is, you know, as you probably already know, former member of the Marching 100, Atlanta native, band director in Atlanta for many, many years.
And also a drum major.
Also a former drum major, trumpet player, you know, received many accolades in the Marching 100 as a student and has been very decorated as a band director in Atlanta. He was the executive music consultant for the movie Drumline. Working on that project, I guess gave him some ideas as to, you know, other directions that we can take the craft of the HBCU marching band in. You know, film was just another medium, and so I think it kind of spawned some inspiration, so to speak, as far as, you know, where we can take this craft. So basically, he came up with the idea. There's a similar production that had been around about 12 years called Blast. And basically what the creators of Blast did was take the DCI, for people who don't know what that is, the Drum Corps International, basically taking the core band style, and he brought it to the stage. And that production was really successful. And I think when Don saw Blast, and when I saw Blast, we were thinking, this is great, but what if we put a twist on it? What if we told our story and introduced our craft, you know, in the same medium? So Don had the idea to bring Drumline Live, Drumline, put an HBCU craft to the theatrical stage. And once the idea spawned, he sought out individuals that he thought that could help him bring that to fruition. So it just so happens that I happened to be down to Florida A&M, and like you said, I was a drum major, head drum major, and I discovered over the years that my niche was actually in the creative aspect. That's what really inspired me. I was active in the show planning committee and the dance team committee. For those who don't know, you know, at Florida A&M and many other colleges, the students come up with a lot of the ideas as far as show creation, what songs you want to play, the formations, and, you know, a lot of the different things. And while I was in school,
Brian, I was going to say, you're that crazy guy that came up with those crazy formations that,
right,
you know, somebody like me had trouble doing.
Yeah, you know, I would hear a song and I would get inspired and I would be like, okay, how can we make this? It's already musical and people will recognize, but how can we make a visual accompaniment to that as well? And what can we do that's not been done and out
before
of the box? Exactly. So I kind of found that was my niche. And I guess during my tenure of being, you know, one of the leaders and the heads of the creative process, Don kind of observed what was going down in Tallahassee. And in respect to that, he saw, you know, the band kind of going in a different direction. And he started asking questions and inquiring, well, you know, who's down there? Who's some of the creative guys? Because basically what he said was, I was the new him. I guess the way he put it. Because when he was
right
in the band, he served in a similar role. So, you know, he contacted me, and we began working in other capacities. You know, they run a camp in Atlanta. I came and worked with the camp, done camps and clinics, did some other things. And I guess what was going on at the time, I didn't really realize it was an evaluation. Is this the person who I could, you know, have at my right hand who could take this project and run for it? And it probably was about a year into us working together that he actually told me about the project and what he had in store for me and the ideas. And I was, hey, sign me up. And at that point, you know, we began, you know, the creative process, you know, him, myself, Slater Thorpe, and we just start sketching out ideas and just trying to figure out, you know, how can we translate, you know, what goes on the gridiron into a theatrical stage, and how can we relate this to audiences so everyone will understand it, embrace it. It will, you know, cross over to different, you know, races, ages. So we began the process. That was probably about 2004, 2005. We kind of just went from there.
Wow.
And here's what's so interesting is Clark and I just had the conversation because this show, we wanted to bring on people who were entrepreneurs in kind of a different light, and you're definitely one of those people. But what you just highlighted was one of the keys of Survive 365, which is, you know, your work ethic, because if I can hear you correctly, you didn't really make a plan to do what you're doing. You just happened to be doing you, and someone
right
recognized it and said, you know what, he can do what I need him to do over here. So your work ethic basically elevated you to where you are.
I guess that will be accurate. That will be accurate. I was going the route of, you know, music education, as so many students,
sure,
you know, find themselves, and I said, well, I guess I'm, you know, I'll be a band director, and I'll teach music because, you know,
sure,
basically for a performer, you know, especially in our particular craft, there's really not a lot of avenues to go after, you know, completion
that's
of your degree. You're either going to go teach or you're going to go, you know, the professional, say if you're a jazz musician or something to that effect, or you're going to go, you know, symphony orchestra. I'm a tuba player, and I didn't really want to go, you know, symphony orchestra type thing, and a lot of jazz opportunities for tuba players. So I was like, well, I guess it's, you know, education. I mean, there are a few, but, you know, that it wasn't really presented
to me
in that fashion.
Yeah, you said there are a few, but I don't know if some, you know, is there a tuba player behind Kim, really?
Exactly.
I don't think so.
Exactly. I, right, so I felt that I was kind of limited. And it's, and it's a funny dynamic. It's because, I mean, if you parallel the marching band to sports, you know, if you look at sports, you know, you have the, you know, the Pop Warner that leads into high school, and high school leads into college, and college leads into the pros. And so, I mean, there's something to aspire to, a professional career at which you do best. But in marching band, nothing existed. You know, once we were at our prime. I mean, you know, Clark, you can attest to this. You know, you were in your prime. We were at the best we will ever be, you know, in our early 20s. And then it's over. It's over.
Absolutely.
I mean, many professional athletes can play the sports into their 40s. But we age out at, you know, our early 20s, and there's nothing after that in respect of doing the same thing that you become expert at. We became experts at, you know,
especially
at that craft. Especially in the 100. And it's like, where do you take that? So with the most obvious places, you take that into the classroom and you hang up your spats and your instrument and your whistle. And now I'm going to teach somebody else now.
Right,
I'll show them at homecoming every year and see if I can still do it, you know. So, and that's basically what it was. And what's going on now, we're creating an opportunity for young musicians to say, okay, you know, I played an instrument in middle school, and I marched all through high school, and I marched all through college. Guess what? I can still march, you know, this craft I've perfected over half my life. I can go see the world. I can go make some money. I can support myself. I can make, you know, I can possibly make a career doing the same thing that I was doing last fall for free, you know.
Absolutely,
so
and loving it for free.
And loving it. So I think it's a dream opportunity. You know, this is something I would have, you know, dreamed of, you know, many, many years ago. And luckily I'm still able to be able to do it at my age.
Yeah.
But it's second nature, and I'm loving it.
And then I know Clark advised me that, you know, in Japan you guys have quite a following. Now, I know Japanese culture, like the back of my hand. My family and I lived there for 3.5 years. That has got to be crazy. Crazy.
It's an interesting dynamic. Actually, it's kind of funny. When we first went to Japan last tour, and it was a little different last tour, we went to Japan at the end of our American tour, and, you know, Japan was the, you know, the culmination, like the icing on the cake, so to speak. This tour, we began in Japan, and then the U.S. will continue after that. So our management team and our producers and our director, who we had on board last year, who are no longer on board with us this year, but they told us, they was like, the Japanese people are very, you know, disciplined people. They're not very responsive. They don't want to. They're probably not going to respond to the crowd participation. They're not going to stand up.
So not true.
They're not going to clap. We were told all these things by these so-called experts in theater.
So
they had
true.
All these accolades. And so we went. You know, we went to Japan. You know, we were thinking, well, we got to water this down in our show, and let's cut this part out, and let's be weary of this. And we really went having, you know, this rigid expectation of the Japanese audience.
Sure.
And like you said, it was completely opposite. It was
off the chain.
They are off the chain. I mean, the response over there is amazing. I mean, to see, I was telling Clark, I met a woman last year on tour, and we took, you know, pictures and signed autographs after the show. And when I went back this past, you know, a month or two ago, I saw the woman again, and she was like, "Brian, how are you?" And she showed me a picture that she took with me last year. And I signed the autograph, and we took more pictures, and I was like, "Thank you." She said, so good seeing you. I couldn't wait till y'all come back. And she said, "I'll see you tomorrow." And I really didn't really pay attention to it. So the next day after the show, I was leaving again, and I saw her there again. And she said, "Hi, Brian." And she had another program booklet, and she took a picture with it again, and she said, "I'll see you tomorrow."
Wow.
The particular fan came to five shows.
Wow.
Five shows in Tokyo. And I was telling
Clark,
you know, a couple of days ago, the tickets over there were about 8,500 yen, you know, approximately 80 some odd dollars. And this man came to, you know, five shows. And it just shows how excited the Japanese audience is over there about what we're doing. And they just really, so everything we heard about the Japanese was completely wrong. I understand now what artists, you travel abroad and they don't want to come back.
Yes.
Exactly. Because I'm really ready to move to Japan. I mean, really, it was great.
You know, and we didn't want to come back. You know, and my husband's in the Navy. The only reason we came back because we had to. I would be, I would be there right now because the people are just so amazing. I mean, so giving, especially to the arts. You know, when it's something creative and it's something artistic, they're very giving of their approval of it and their appreciation of it. It's so different than in the States. So different.
It is so different. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. The response is really good here in the States as well. I can get into that a little more in my early experience with that. But it's different. I mean, to see someone who's literally the tears are welling up in their eyes when they're standing in front of you because you're standing there in front of them. And I'm like, are you for real? Like, I just did, you know, I just marched around and did a dance. I did that all since I was 13. I mean, are you serious?
Wow.
And they really, you know, are really receptive to, you know, Western culture as a whole, especially this segment of Western culture that they just don't see. You know, we take it for granted. We can go into a stadium on a Friday night at a high school or go into a college stadium on Saturday, and we'll see. You know, we're accustomed to it. We can see a parade, Martin Luther King Day, and we're used to the HBC band and the, you know, so-called, you know, show style or traditional. But to them, it's really, really something special, and they really show it. So it was great. It was great.
Wow. And if you're tuning in right now, this is the conversation. We're talking to Brian Snell, one of the headliners of Drumline Live, a wonderful play that's touring. Just got back from Asia, and it's going to start their U.S. tour coming up soon. Well, Brian, just for those who are listening, explain your characters. Explain so that someone listening who may not have had the context we've been talking about can understand what type of play you all are putting on.
Well, the type of I would call it a production. I probably wouldn't want to use the language play because that sets for certain expectations as if it has a plot and a antagonist and a protagonist and it has dialogue and, you know, it's not really that type of thing. It's more of a musical review. But the musical review has a story to a certain extent, and it has a purpose. And the purpose of our story is, you know, everybody here especially in the States, you know, Drumline was very popular, the movie. So people, you know, even people who have not experienced personally, they understand loosely what it's about. You know, the high-stepping band, and we can get down and do the choreography, and we can boogie, and we play all the latest tunes. Well, yeah, everybody hears that. But the story that we're trying to tell is the origins, to a certain degree, in all the different musical styles that contributed to what you see now. Dr. Foster, you know, former director of the Marching, founder of the Marching 100, recently deceased, said that relevance is one of the major things that plays in that makes us so special, what's relevant in today's culture. And what people don't really understand is that the HBCU band has pulled from so many genres of music that you get this gumbo, this style that you see today. So In our production, we take you from Africa, which is the origins of everything musical and everything in general. You know, so we take you on this journey. We show you how the African influence influenced HBCU. Then we take you, give you a little bit of soul, 60s, a little Motown. Then we give you a little bit of big band, swing and jazz. We give you a little bit of gospel. We're just showing you all these genres of music that we pull from and continue to pull from that gives us the relevance of the HBCU band and why it stays popular because so many people can relate to it. But it just didn't just pop out of nowhere. It pulled from a lot of different areas. So when you see our show, don't expect to see, you know, drum major whistles and high knee lifting for 2 hours. That's not what it is, you know. So you're going to get a wide variety of musical styles. We're going to feature vocalists. We're going to feature our solo musicians. I mean, you're going to get the full gamut. We even take some liberties to kind of go completely out of the box with some of our percussion features and different scenes. It's really, you know, a wide variety. And most people are kind of surprised when they see the show because they're going expecting, okay, I'm going to see, you know, kicking down and gush and, you know, talking on the side of your neck for 2 hours. No, we're not going to do that, you know. But you're going to get plenty of it. But it's going to be, you know, packaged in a certain way that's very surprising to people. It's not all drums. as some people, you can just see the name, it's Drumline, expect a Drumline for 2.5 hours. No, it's really, we like to say Drumline Live and the Drumline experience, or the HBCU experience, which means we're going to give you this whole band experience, not just the drums, but you're going to get plenty of trumpets and tubas and saxophones and everything. This day, all the components of the HBCU marching band.
Now, how large is the cast, Brian?
The cast is about 39 people, 39, 40. Basically, it's a very small instrumentation, obviously, because of the dimensions and the limitations of the stage. But you know, when it comes to theatrical cast, it is a large cast. Right? It's a large touring cast. So we basically just our wind players and our drummers, and have five dancers, and have a drum major and a host, and that's pretty much it.
So this is a major production.
We would like to think so. We would like to think so. Absolutely. We've partnered with Columbia Artist Management Incorporated out of New York City. They're the largest theatrical management company in the country, I believe. And they've been in the business about 75 years. If you go to the Columbia Artist Management website, you'll see productions like Cats and, Blue Man Group and Chicago, and you'll see those acts right next to Drumline Live. So we would like to think that we're on our way, at least, to getting up there with the big boys, because we're under the same, umbrella company as a lot of other productions in terms of management, yes.
And that's what I wanted people to understand, is when you see Drumline Live come to your city, make sure you go and support it, because
right.
we want you guys to have the same exposure as a Cats to the world,
right.
or, a
right.
Wicked or whatever it is. We want you
right.
guys to get to that level. So as Obama said, or anyone else would say, we have to help you guys get to where you need to be. So everyone who's listening, go out and see Drumline Live when they come to your city.
Awesome. Really
and Brian, one of the things you and I talked about off air is that, and I want you to expound on this, is that this is an all African American cast, from top to bottom, to the light guy, to the guy plugging in, the fog machine.
Yeah,
I thought that was wonderful.
It's worked out to be that. Wasn't that initially?
Right.
Basically, what Drumline Live is, Drumline Live is the product of two different companies, Halftime Live and Columbia Artist Management. Halftime Live was a project, it was the initial project that I spoke of earlier that Don Roberts came up with, and we worked, on that project actually in 2005. Well, people don't know, really, this is actually our third tour instead of our second tour. Halftime Live was the first version, I guess the beta version of our production. We fondly refer to it as the Chitlin' Circuit Tour.
Right.
Basically, when we were bare bones. No budget. About 40. It was a larger cast, about 45, 46 people. We didn't know anything about theater. We didn't have any costume changes. It just was a flat stage with all the lights on. But we just had an idea, and the framework of that show is still the framework that we're using today. And like I was telling you, telling the listeners, the project initially, we all came to Atlanta and we all had auditions, and it was about 40, 45 people living in one house. It was a large house, but we lived in Stone Mountain, Georgia. With one of our, business partners had a large home that he owned. He's a property investor. And we were like, well, let's house all these people here, and we can just utilize this facility. We can have rehearsals here. We can do everything. So there's like 40-plus people living in one large home. I mean, we had air mattresses down in the basement, and, we all ate breakfast every morning together. We would go out to our tennis court, and we'd do calisthenics early in the morning in the cold, and we would do all our drills and all our rehearsals, and everything was created right there. We called it the mansion, and we created everything right there, humble beginnings. We borrowed instruments from various schools around Atlanta and kind of put everything together, and we just, big borrowed the stove, pretty much
right.
to get that first production off. And we probably only did about four different shows then, but it was the genesis, it was the beginning. And about 2008, I believe, we actually got the call from Columbia Artist Management, who was looking to do a project. They were researching Drumline and, you know, researching theatrical productions to see if there was anyone out there already doing, because they thought this would be a great thing and no one was doing it. So they got in contact with Don Roberts and Waleed Shamsuddin, another one of our owners and business partners, and basically said, well, hey, you guys are already doing what we're planning on doing. Why reinvent the wheel? Let's just collaborate together and make this thing happen. So about 18 months later, 18 months of you know, pre-planning and pre-production, Drumline Live was born. So once again, Drumline Live came from Halftime Live and Columbia Artist Management, and they produced Drumline Live. So I forgot where I was, but once again, so on the first tour, like I said, us not knowing a whole lot about the theatrical environment, we pretty much provided all the creative side of everything in terms of the band. We controlled the band. And our director at the time and our producer at the time, you know, Marilyn Magnus, they brought in all the technical people, the lights and the stage design and wardrobe, a lot of things we didn't really know about that well. We're a bunch of band guys. You know, we were kind of green at the time. You know, so we got through that first tour successfully. Coming on the second tour, you know, for various reasons, different individuals chose to go in different directions. And, you know, last year, much of our technical side, you know, they were, you know, was pretty mixed, you know, but they were mainly, you know, white individuals. You know, basically it was like the technical side with the white folks and the band folks with the black folks, you know. And it's kind of how it was. Even though everyone worked together well, there wasn't any issues. But this year, you know, going to this tour, you know, it just didn't really work out that way. So we were kind of given the autonomy to hire, you know, the technical side as well. So we got in contact with another gentleman. It was Harlan Penn. He's a Florida A&M graduate. Worked in the Essential Theater. He came on as our, you know, set designer. Then he recommended someone else who was the light designer. Then the light designer recommended someone else for wardrobe. And then we had a person internally who we could end up doing sound. And before we looked around, we realized that our entire technical side now was, you know, African-American and all graduates from HBCUs. And when I thought about it, Don, we talked about it, I said, who else better to be on the other side than people who lived this and they experienced it and they get it? You know, because what we had to do before, we had to explain things to people. Well, this is what we do, this because of that. They would say, well, why are you doing that? Why are you blowing the whistle? Why are you calling the band to attention? Well, that's part of it. I have to do that. And it was a lot of things we had to explain because they just didn't understand. Well, typical theater doesn't do this. I said, well, we understand that, but this has to be done to be authentic. And it was a lot of, you know, tug of war a lot between the both, you know, the different factions that formed. And bringing in the production crew, the technical crew we have now, a lot of that wasn't necessary. They already knew. You know, I went to HBCU. I went to this particular college. I was a Greek at this school, and everybody automatically got it. And when we, you know, we had an idea about, okay, we understand exactly why you're doing it, but how about this? We can help you do it better if I do it. You do it this way. Awesome.
Amazing.
Well, what if I light you like, well, this is the drum major scene. You know what? I remember the drum major when I was in college. I'm going to light you like this. I want to accentuate you even more because I remember my image of drum majors. I want you to be seen like this. And everything is just, it was just on another level, you know. And so from top to bottom, you know, from the technical crew all the way down to the cast, even when you go back to the Halftime Live side, all the, you know, the partners and the directors, it's for us by us, you know. It's a wonderful thing.
And I was just thinking to myself, because, you know, what I do for a living is production. I was just thinking to myself, if you have an African-American group of people that do production, they would understand when you're getting ready to blow the whistle. You wouldn't have to explain that to someone. Because I'm just sitting here thinking, gosh, the crew I work with every day, they would freak out when you blew that whistle. They'd be like, oh, my God, why are you doing that? But, you know, if it's us, they understand. So I so get it. And it's amazing. And it's probably such a blessing for you to be able to employ as many African-Americans in production as you do.
Right,
Because that's very rare.
Right. It is a wonderful thing. And, you know, we basically have a feeder program, you know, from the universities. You know, we get new graduates.
Wow.
And it's a wonderful thing because now we can expand that, you know, from the people who are studying theater, who are studying voice,
sure,
who are studying dance, people who are studying the arts. And they can kind of come right into, you know, this production, and like you know, like a feeder program for the universities, and they have an end goal already in mind, because some of their peers are already, you know, employed, and now we have people now who say, okay, I want to do sound, you know, for Drumline Live, you know, in the next couple of years when I hit Brian Snell, here's my resume, and I'll be coming out in this year, and have this person, well, you know, when I graduate, you know, so now it's becoming a career goal. I, to be honest with you, the first group, you know, and I also, sir, I wear many hats. I'm the casting director too, so I was the one who made all the phone calls the first year and found band members and, you know, organize the auditions and kind of do that type of thing, kind of like a recruiter, you know, in many aspects. Got to dig people up sometimes. So at first production, people really didn't know us. You know, we're brand new. Okay, what are you guys doing? What is this? So basically a lot of people that I had to contact, and they just basically came along based off, you know, my reputation and them knowing me. And they were like, well, Brian Snell, they called me B. Snell. B. Snell said this is cool, and so, okay, we'll
so
check
it
out.
Do it.
Right, and basically then we casted, you know, most of the band that way. And basically that first band, you know, I basically found people who were kind of in between. You know, sometimes, you know, people's plans don't work out the way that they, you know, initially had envisioned them. You know, you come to school, and sometimes you may end up with financial debts, and you may have to sit out for a little while and work. And, you know, we've all seen that happen. I know, Clark, we know many people who came up there, some of the most phenomenally talented people we've ever seen. Maybe they didn't even end up graduating. They had to go back home.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, somebody, exactly. And the thing about it, you know, I knew that it was, you know, a lot of people like that, you know, in this particular, you know, in this city at the time. So I kind of had to, you know, beat the bushes a little bit and find some people. And I kind of got those people who needed that extra push or needed that opportunity. And that's kind of what that first band was, you know, chiefly. Looking back to what that band was, and then looking at this band now, I want to say this: we just casted about 8 recent college graduates, people who are coming right out of college with degrees and saying, look, this is my choice. This is not what I'm going to do because I'm in between. I'm trying to get my tuition money back and get in school next semester, because initially that's what it was. Now it's people with, you know, business degrees and, you know, you name it. Matter of fact, we have 2 guys who just finished their master's degrees. And now they're on tour with us. This is what we're choosing to be a part of this production now, because we see it as an opportunity. So it's really changed, you know, as far as the dynamic of the cast member and who we're attracting to the production. So I'm very happy. We're very happy about that.
And it probably changes how tight your show is, too, because you're getting people fresh out of school, man, and, you know, they've committed to their education. And like you said, they're making a choice for this. You know, this isn't like their second, you know, what they have to do. These brothers or sisters probably can go get, you know, they can own their own businesses, do whatever they want, but they're making a choice. So your show must be phenomenal. It has got, you're coming to Milwaukee soon, and I can't, I'm in Wisconsin. I can't wait. I really can't wait.
Oh, man, we're getting the people who, you know, who turn down jobs, you know.
Wow.
I'm turning down that job, that $60,000 job. No, I don't want to do that right now. I'll do that later.
Uh-huh.
This is what I want to do. And we get to the point now where we're actually recruiting, you know, the cream of the crop. You know, we're getting the drum majors. We're getting the section leaders, the officers, the Kappa Kappa Psi, you know, the Phi Mu Alpha, you know, the band, you know, fraternities. We're getting the cream, you know, of the HBCU bands now. And the talent level, you know, was always high. But now it's like, you know, sometimes I'm you know, warming up the band, or I may be walking around before we get ready to play, and I just listen to some guys warming up, and they'll get in a little corner, and they'll, you know, play together. I'm just amazed. I'm like, wow. I mean, we have some phenomenal talent. Yeah, I'm amazed at them, and it's really elevated the production. It really has.
Clark, you can go on tour.
I think my time has run out. Brian, real quick before our show ends, tell us if people are looking for show dates or upcoming cities you're going to be visiting here in the States, where would they go?
You can go to the Drumline Live site. We're in the process of updating that site, drumlinelive.com. If you want to get an fully updated schedule, for right now you can go to cami.com, CAMI.com, and in the search just put in Drumline, and you'll be presented with our Drumline Live page, and you have the full schedule for the fall and the spring, and you have links to each particular date, and then that click on that date, it links to that particular venue, and it links also to tickets. So everything is right there. Once again, that'll be the CAMI site, CAMI.com, and just type in Drumline in your search. And also, another reason, if you just Google Drumline Live, you know, it's all over the web. You know, every day I'm so excited about getting on the road and, you know, just seeing with the venues, how they're advertising and what they're putting up and some of the anticipation. I'll just Google Drumline Live some days and just see what comes up and hit on pictures, and I'll see pictures of myself and the cast, and just to see the many ways it's being advertised, you know, around the country and on the web. It's very exciting. So there's a couple different sites that you can get that information from.
Oh, wonderful.
Awesome.
Well, we want to thank you, brother, as they say, B-Snell, for coming out and spending some time with us on the conversation. I really appreciate everything. It's been a pleasure knowing you these many years, and I'm so proud of what you've accomplished. I'm proud of this production, and I hope to see you guys on Broadway soon.
Hopefully so, and I want to thank the both of you for inviting me and giving us the opportunity to speak about our production. Clark, you know, you were one of our inspirations as young band members coming up through the ranks, and, you know, we looked up to you as a drum major. We were Clark taught us about the image, you know, how image it also ties into D's. And he was the epitome of the drum major. He was the epitome of cool. You do it on the field and you do it off the field as well. So we all model ourselves after Clark.
See, now I'm blushing. Now I'm blushing. And
weakness. When you're very graceful as a drum major, we should call it sweetness and sugar because you're sweet. Clark defines sweetness. He taught how to be sweet. So we still use those terms, and he's still revered today among the drum majors in the band today. So thank you for being a motivation to me, too.
And, Brian, the check is in the mail. So thank you very much. Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
And, Brian, well, I just want to say thank you for even committing yourself to this endeavor, because what it does for me is someone who no longer lives in the South and no longer around HBCUs, it allows my children to still have that legacy. So thank you very much.
Right. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, Kim, that's another show to this Sunday at 4 p.m. It was a pleasure doing this again with you, and I just want to remind everybody about our earlier Community Health Fair, Sunday, September 26th, 1:30 to 4 p.m. in Atlanta at 838 Cascade Avenue, 30311 at the Vickers Building. You can get free testing and screening on just about anything you can think of, be able to speak with some live doctors, some practitioners that are continuing to work in their field, and it's free.
Yes, and make sure you go out and take a family member. That's the urgency. Take a family member to this event. It's well worth it. All right, Clark, I think that's about it. And we want to thank Brian again, Dr. Downing, for being our guest. Anything else you have to say, Clark?
No, thank you so much for being the greatest host on the earth.
Oh, your check is in the mail, too.
Well, that's it. That's it for the conversation. We'll see you in 2 weeks, and we're out.
All right. Thanks, guys.